This is the Astrology University podcast, helping you find inspiration, insight, and connection through the study of astrology. And I'm your host, Tony Howard. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Astrology University podcast. And we have something very special for you this episode. We're starting a new series called the Cosmic Eye Monthly Forecast. And I'm really excited to be joined today by Vanessa Montgomery, the author of Star Power. Hey, Vanessa.
Hey, Tony. Hey, everyone.
It's so great to have you here. So we're going to talk about the highlights for the month, but we're not actually going to be starting like on the first of the month. In general, we're going to start when the sun changes signs. So we're a little behind the curve with this particular episode because we're talking about Gemini season, but we're going to address everything to do with Gemini season. So meaning the sun just moved into Gemini, and during its time in Gemini, the major aspects that transpire and what's going down for the month ahead. So we're going to start today by talking about the sign change and the season of Gemini. So Vanessa, do you want to kind of lead us into that?
Sure, of course. So Gemini season, it's certainly the sign of the trickster. It's mutable air. And of course, the solar seasons are based on our climate, our seasons. So a mutable sign, is it wrapping up a season? The weather's changeable. The unexpected happens. And of course, the end of this season in the Northern Hemisphere is spring. And where I'm in the Southern in Australia is autumn. So changeability, it's a little unstable. There's instability already. So Gemini, I like to think about the archetypes. It's the wordsmith, it's the curious cat, and as I said, the trickster, never to be underestimated. It's all about words and language, communication, listening, rapid spread of information as well, and generally an all-access pass, which is something that's really key to remember about Gemini, I think, and its ruler, of course, Mercury. You should have free communication, free speech, you know, think about all the things, put all the things on the table so that you can work through the facts. So, and it is, of course, just the facts. It's all about making links. It's very mobile. It's agile. It's adaptable, like neurons and synapses. They change and they're quick. And there's no judgment. I think that's that interesting part of that dual nature of Gemini. It's not judgmental. There's like yin and yang, there's the good and the bad. It just is what it is. And Gemini,
just reporting the news, right?
Yeah, just reporting the news. Absolutely. It's not what I think about the news or the opinion. It's just, this is what we know at this point. So it's also a yang sign. So it's yang mutable air. It's reaching out to make the connections. It's putting the words out there, not just thinking about them and ruminating. Like, it's let's swap. What do you think? What do I think? And building and amplifying that. And what else about it? It's I think of the diamond for the clarity, and the butterfly for that quick, swift pollination of minds. So it's quite a fun, quick season. Of course, the shadow side is, you know, can be too light, or there's nervousness. The nervous system can be a bit too highly strung, be a bit ungrounded and flaky. So it's really important to remember to rest, eat foods that are warm and heartening, and nervines and adaptogens, like you can use teas and things like that. Eat regularly, and rest as well as, you know, it's mutable. So that's like, do something, have a rest, do something, have a rest. Don't just like burn your system, you know, always on a screen. The duality, polarization. I think Gemini is all about not getting caught in this binary. It's that all access pass. It can go everywhere. It can find the third, fourth, and fifth options. And like the diamond with all the sides on it, it's important to look at all the sides without just clinging on to one. So that's something important to remember for this month, of course, because like that's the highlight of this season. That's the point of this season. So to make the most of it, write, journal, communicate. I think if, you know, our mind is so, it's just so changeable. We can change our perception in the blink of an eye and therefore basically change our reality. And I think of the RAS, the reticular activating system in our mind, it's quite Gemini in a way. So whatever you look for, you'll find. So you can decide what you want to find before you find it. It's, you know, when you buy a red car, you see all these red cars of a certain model. Right. That's the RAS basically. And that magical side of Mercury and Gemini. The final thing I really want to bring a point to for Gemini season is, what are you feeding your mind? You know, what information are you taking in? Make sure it's nutritious, cultivate it. You know, don't just give it junk food. Because you're priming your mind again. It's that RAS. And notice your language, notice how other people are talking, internal dialogue, put the spell back into spelling, of course. And I think, you know, like horary astrology, the result is in the inception. So if you think something, guess, you know, and you language something a certain way, guess what your result is most likely to be. So that's putting the magic back in as well. Set the goal verbally, say what you want, not what you don't want. So that's right. That one.
Yeah. And that's really great advice, because it's about putting the focus on communication, which is where our attention is called to right now. Mm-hmm. You may have noticed things kind of sped up on that front. I surely have, especially if you have mutable signs, right? Where you just might be having more conversations and at a fast pace, and the information is just piling in. And so Vanessa's advice there is really great, choosing your words wisely and, you know, trying to slow things down in as much as you can and respond with intention and clear focus and clarity. Really, really great ideas. And we'll have some mantras for you to end our call today, and we'll speak to some of that too. So another thing that we want to cover in our monthly forecast is the moon cycles, and kind of just highlight what's going on with the moon. And this month's a little bit special because we've got some eclipses. But Vanessa, do you want to lead us into the moon cycles?
The monthly moons. Yes, the monthly moons. So, of course, we're going to get a new and a full moon in every cycle generally. We've already had the new moon in Gemini, so that's a great time to set intentions. And just before it, you know, the dark moon, let things go for the month. I always set new intentions for the 6-month cycle on the new moon, and I write them all down, draw some pictures, and then when the new moon comes in 6 months, I'm like, oh, what did I write? And I read it out and burn it and release it and look for evidence, you know, where am I with that? And
sorry to interrupt, but with that new moon in Gemini, it's like everywhere you look is Gemini this month, right?
It's all on. Yes. It was May 22nd.
Okay, thank you.
2 Gemini. Wherever you have 2 Gemini or very early in your chart, that's where that new moon was set. So same with the full moon. Where is 15 degrees Sagittarius in your chart? That's really the area of life this month that's highlighted, and where you generally have a Sagittarian approach. We should say that for the sun as well. Where is Gemini in your chart? That's where the sun's lighting it all up for this month. You know, it's like spotlight on this particular area of life for you personally. And I'll just go into that a little bit more too as an idea. You know, we have the forecast, but then if you don't apply it to your own chart, it's like with fashion, is it off the rack or is it bespoke? You know, it's going to fit a lot better if you have a look at your chart. Right. So 15 degrees Sagittarius. I think with the Gemini and Sag, it's the communication and knowledge access. Anyway, language. And I have noticed about this Gemini month, you know, with everything that's happening, there's a real like pinpoint on the languaging, like this is right to say, this is wrong to say, this is, you know, and just sort of tightening into that and learning more about language and how it affects other people. So that is being highlighted this month. So with the polarity of Sagittarius, wherever that is in your chart, of course, it's where you look to seek expansion, probably quite positive. And it's really the polarities about balancing the facts, Gemini, with what does it all mean, Sagittarius? You know, that Sagittarius is not, that full moon is not in orb of the south node in Sagittarius. I wouldn't be going, I've seen a few things where people are talking about the shadow side of Sag, but it's not, it's just not near that notes, I wouldn't read it like that. What do you think, Tony?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I think that's a great point. Yeah. Yes. I do think though that, you know, just we're in the midst of some, you know, when you were talking earlier about the Gemini and the truth and finding the facts, I think you have to, in some cases these days, you have to make a little extra effort to find the actual facts.
And that's Gemini, you know, Gemini doesn't just land on one flower, does it? It's true. It's like search through a multitude of opinions and sources.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
You know, there's the truth can be, truth and lies can be in a little bit in everything. So some, and that's where the Sag can come together. Like the Gemini will run through and collect the data, and then the Sag will like put it together. You definitely just can't take a bite of one thing, or you're really not getting that bigger picture. So Sag does bring in the bigger picture for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Information. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So Sagittarius, of course, also is friendship and brotherhood and sisterhood and expansion, vision, relentless optimism and positivity. Like, how can we make the best of this situation? Where can we go with it by expanding, not contracting, expanding horizons? It's also very nature and animals as well, I think, with the Sagittarius. Just had to throw that in.
Yeah, because people just bring that up with Taurus usually, but yeah.
But Sagittarius and Taurus have those in common, like that's right. Where they get along is nature and, nature particularly, and animals are part of nature. Same with Pisces. So if we do talk about the shadow of Sag, of course, it's dogma and hot air.
Yep. There's a little bit of that going around now too.
Yeah. Getting as on always. The bandwagon on Sag's like loves a bandwagon. Yeah. Yep. Like, oh, there's one. Let's get on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So facts versus meaning, expand your vision with an eye on the facts. I think it's balancing those, and those two areas of your chart obviously need balance. Connecting facts to meaning.
Do you see things as sort of coming to a head during a full moon?
Yes. Yeah. Good point. So, yeah, it seems like the heightened energy and the new dark moon is like a lower internal energy, so energy going down. And they say people that use the lunar cycle for planting, you know, the light draws the water up into the leaves at the full moon. And for us, that's like the energy is full and down into the roots, and we're meant to drop down to in the new moon. And I think that, you know, there's this idea of when the moon's full, when we were primal, you know, there's a lot of light outside. We can go out at night. It's safer. We're drawn out, and people are definitely, the energy's heightened. So emotionally, if one hasn't kind of worked out their emotional stuff, it's all up and it's difficult. You know how they say full moons, you know, there's a lot more action on the streets.
Definitely. Definitely. So, and it seems too, like with it being Gemini season and with the new moon in Gemini, it kind of, and we're going to talk about this in a little bit too, with Venus retrograde being in Gemini, it seems like I just got this image as we were talking about things coming to a head with the full moon and all that you were saying about Sagittarius, that it is a good time in the lead up to that full moon to do your fact gathering now, right? To dig into the news, be as objective as you can.
Objective, yes. Yeah,
because Gemini wants us to kind of cultivate some objectivity, yes. Rather than subjectivity. And that's really hard to do for some of us, you know, you water moons out there, I'm looking at you, but this is the time to do that so that when the full moon, when things do come to a head and you do step into those, the beliefs more, that you've laid a fertile ground for that.
Mm. Yeah, good point. And we are on the waxing cycle of the moon as we speak now. And gather the facts. It's a good point. There's so many different sources of information and opinions about everything that's happening at the moment. And I do see a lot of people judging and policing other people, cancel culture coming in. I don't like what you've posted. But the thing is, again, there's like, if you look at some things, there's grains of truth and then there's grains of hype or whatever, look at agendas behind things. Gemini, all the air signs are so detached. Like I think it's interesting, each air sign's symbol, the glyph, has two components, most separate. Gemini's, you know, connected with that top and bottom line, but it's still two, like, mm-hmm. You do have to step back, and you'll never have all the information if you reject everything except that one piece that you've cottoned onto.
Right.
Doesn't mean you have to commit to it just because you expose your mind to it or read it.
Right. Well, thanks for that, Vanessa. I think that brings us to our next segment, which is going to be, which we're calling give me the headlines, right?
Give me the headlines, Tony.
Yeah. And so what we mean by that is we're looking at what the major aspects are during this period that we're looking at while the sun is in Gemini. And this month, perhaps the biggest news is Venus being retrograde in Gemini. But there's also some big news here with Mars coming up to conjunct Neptune. So Mars is in Pisces, Neptune's in Pisces. And as we speak, they're getting closer and closer, and they'll be forming a conjunction soon this month as well. So we want to talk about that a bit. And just to start with the Venus retrograde a bit, and we are going to talk a little bit about as well some of the events that have been brewing in the United States in the last week, a lot of dramatic stuff happening, and just kind of point to what we see there just a little bit. We could do a whole show on that, and maybe we will at some point. I expect we'll do a fuller show on that later this year, because looking ahead at the transits, I think this is just going to get hotter and hotter. But coming back to Venus retrograde, I first just want to give you the dates. So Venus retrograde is going to be, we're already in it now. So it started around May 12th or 13th, depending on where you are in the world. And it goes through June 24th or 25th. And it is in Gemini the entire time, this cycle. Venus entered Gemini on April 4th, and because it's retrograde, it'll spend a much longer time at Gemini than it normally would, and it'll be in Gemini all the way through August 7th. So Gemini season is very long for Venus, at least this year. Venus stationed retrograde on May 12th or 13th, like I said, at 21 degrees 50 minutes Gemini. So if you've got important planets at 21 degrees Gemini or any of the other mutable signs, this is an important cycle for you. And I like looking at all the aspects. So if you have any planets at those degrees, you might just look and see what aspect it's making to that 21 degrees. Station direct happens on June 24th or 25th, depending on where you are, at 5 degrees Gemini. So you'll also want to note that date as well. One of the things that's unusual about the station retrograde is that also happened with a Neptune aspect to Venus. So it kind of added an extra flavor there. And the station direct doesn't have that aspect, has a sextile with Chiron. So my prediction, if I do forecasting more than prediction, but I think that the beginning of this Venus retrograde cycle is a bit more dramatic than the end. There's a shadow period with any retrograde cycle. And for Venus, that's April 10th to May 12th. So we were in the shadow period starting around April 10th. And the shadow period ends around July 30th. Another very unusual thing about this particular Venus retrograde cycle is that it's out of bounds. So Venus went out of bounds on April 3rd, and it's out of bounds through June 2nd, which is just a couple of days from now as we're recording this. I think we'll be releasing this tomorrow, and Venus will still be out of bounds, and I'll tell you a little bit about that as well. But when we look at any retrograde cycle, you do want to pay attention to the stations, and those have to do with planetary speed. So I gave you the dates for those, but that's when Venus is at its slowest. And so it's kind of, you can think of it as sort of festering, or it's constellating its energy during those times.
So Tony, if someone has that exact aspect to a planet, would you say, there's a specific tie-in for them in their own chart?
Definitely. And we'll talk a little bit about what Venus retrograde means as well. But, you know, one of the short bumper stickers is, I think this particular cycle is about reassessing your values, or maybe just getting in touch with what you value more. For me, I'm somebody who the station was directly aspecting one of my natal planets. Yes. I got it instantly. I felt like this time I didn't actually have to wait for the whole process. I just was tapped into, like, I was really thinking about, exploring, talking about, what I really valued. That's what I was talking about with my friends, with my family, with my partner. Mm. It was just really up for me during that time. And I kind of knew instantly. And what I got more clear about is just that, you know, I found myself saying, what's really important to me now is this. You know, it's like I got clear that I wasn't really giving what I truly valued enough weight in my decision making. And mm-hmm. so the volume got turned up on that. And I think that if this Venus retrograde is aspecting one of your natal planets, that's up for you. And especially in the house that it's in, for me, the transit was happening to my fourth house planets. And yeah. I was talking a lot about home and place and where I live. So for you, if it's, you know, obviously if it's in a relationship house, that's Venus doing double duty. Because
yeah.
Vanessa, tell me, I always think Venus always has something to do with relationships, no matter which house it's in. But yeah. do you think that the same?
Yeah, I do. I do think that you can still think, well, without applying it to your chart, it is the Venus. There's going to be relationships. It's not in my seventh house, but I do, you know, I just sort of use myself as a litmus. What am I thinking about? And I have been thinking about past relationships, particularly, I mean, it's in Gemini, particularly language and actually how I've offended people.
Okay.
Drastic sometimes that can be, and it just kind of explodes. So that's the memory lane I've been on, and just kind right. of thinking about going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's interesting. And also in terms of what, like, decorative and value and beauty, like, I bought an iPad Pro to do and the pen so that I could do more of my own branding and artwork on there. And I thought it's not the time to buy it, but I really want to. Like, I'm going to do it. And Gemini is associated with graphic design as well, interestingly. So
right.
it has been that aspect as well, definitely relating, but the words, really very much about the words and the language. And that's the Gemini season too. Like, it's all tripled up because there's been a lot of air and Gemini.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, yeah, like the beauty side, the decorative side for sure. Also.
Yeah, and you mentioned memory lane, and I think that's a great image for, I want to say, any retrograde cycle, because any retrograde cycle can be about revisiting or reviewing what's specific Absolutely. To that planet or what that planet represents. So it's not unusual. We'll talk about this in just a couple of minutes about how it's not unusual to kind of revisit previous relationships or old friendships or people that you've engaged with in the past.
Yeah.
And even if you're not actually seeing them, you might just be, like Vanessa said, traveling down memory lane, thinking
yeah.
about them, reviewing those
message?
Stories.
Mm-hmm. I'll bring that in actually now. What, like, it can be actual, you know, Mystic Medusa calls them love zombies. Love zombies from the past start texting you, or maybe right. you're the love zombie texting someone else.
Right.
But also I do notice it's those relations come back in your mind or maybe in your dreams, and a particular component of them, that's the message for you. That's the messenger. And of course, Gemini is the messenger. So
right.
take the message, like, don't maybe read into it too much. What's the message coming up? What's the point of it? And then address that.
Yeah, definitely. And you'll hear astrologers also talking about past relationships coming back during Venus retrograde, and they'll encourage you not to explore them. And I have a little bit different advice, so I'm curious to hear what you say too, Vanessa. But we have to acknowledge that we're talking about this during a pandemic, so
yes.
dating a person
it's
isn't
complicated.
Necessarily, yeah, it's complicated right now. And some of us, if you've been cooped up, you might find it especially compelling to reach out to an old flame, just because mm-hmm. you already have that connection established. And my advice is that if you're feeling drawn to do that, it's actually okay to do, because I think there's probably a reason that you're being called to revisit that relationship. There's something you still Maybe there's something undone, or maybe there's something you still have to learn from that relationship. So I don't give the advice to not go back to those relationships, that they're doomed to fail or anything like that. My advice is to try again if you're drawn to, but just don't rush anything. Use this time to get to know the person like you're getting to know them anew, if it's somebody you haven't talked to for a while. And use this time to reflect on your relationship history. You know, maybe after an initial reattraction, you find yourself suddenly remembering why you broke up in the first place.
That's what I think too.
sure, that can happen. And that's pretty classic. And, you know, if we were going to predict just based on statistics, yeah, we might be right. So that's why we're saying don't jump in too quickly, just in case. Give yourself time to get to know this person again. On the other hand, you might find that one of you or both of you have changed in a way that's resolved that old problem that you used to have, and that you can salvage things in the relationship and find the good things and maybe build on the foundation of good that was already there for a whole new chapter together. People do get divorced and then get remarried, and then they're happy with that second phase of their relationship. So it can happen. Anything you want to add to that, Vanessa?
Yeah, unless you're getting to it already, you know, in the lighter side of astrology with all the memes and everything, which I do find very amusing. I talk a lot about, you know, Venus retrograde, a lot of people break up. What do you think about that idea?
Oh, yeah. I think it has to do with that value process, assessing values. I think that's what it's all about. It's like you suddenly realize, you know what, this relationship doesn't match what I really value. And I'm really aware of that all of a sudden, and it feels really important to make a change. Yep. So I think that can be a real catalyst for things coming apart. And if that's you, you know, I would say, or if you see your relationship breaking down during this period, be intentional about it. Come back to your center and assess your values and see if that's the reason why, and this person really isn't a reflection of what you really value, then it might be a good idea to let it go.
It's like an opportunity in a way.
Yeah, totally. To create a new relationship that is more reflective of who you really are and what you value. It's retrograde in Gemini. So think about it, talk about it, have those conversations.
Yeah, it's the language, isn't it? And opening up new ideas, like the retrograde on anything is just that opportunity to go back over, isn't it? Like, it's not about going full speed ahead. It does mean you sort of go back and sort of tweak a bit and change direction somewhat to get back into alignment more than just change. Find that alignment, you're off. The retrogrades are so valuable for that. So the quicker they come around, you know, like the Mercury retrogrades, the less sort of slam you get to get back into alignment, because it hasn't given you time to get too far out, hopefully.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Whereas Venus and Mars can kick our butts a little bit more.
a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, I agree. Like, it's not nothing is a no. It's with awareness and intention, there's got to be something that's changing. Definitely. I would say, especially with the aspect I'm going to talk about after this section, just enjoy it. Like, be open, enjoy it. Do not hit the commitment button. There's more information to come to light, especially since this is in Gemini. So what is that? Be open to it. Be receptive.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, another thing important to point out about Venus retrograde is that it's a powerful timing technique. So, and we'll talk a little bit more about the meaning again here in a couple of minutes, but each Venus retrograde is like a period that can refer back to the previous cycles and the future cycle and forward to the future cycles. So it creates a long-term story arc over the course of our lives if we look back later in life and connect the dots from the Venus retrograde cycles that are in the same signs. Because it has a predictable 8-year pattern where Venus will retrograde in the same sign every 8 years in general. There's a little technical complexity to that, but in general, it's fruitful during any Venus retrograde cycle to look back 8 years and see if there's a connection to the themes from that previous time period and related to that sign and house placement in your chart. So just think back, you know, this is 2012 in this situation. Venus was in Gemini, retrograde in Gemini in 2012. And think about what was going on then. And perhaps a relationship comes back into focus that started or ended in that cycle, whether it's a friendship or romance or something else related to that particular house in your birth chart. So for the 2020 cycle, look at the placement of Gemini in your chart, because that house will be featured right now, and it was also highlighted 8 years ago. If you're using whole sign houses, that'll just be one house. And if you're using a quadrant house system like Placidus, you might be looking at two houses, right? But in either case, because Venus was going to cross some ground, remember we were saying it goes from like 21 to 5 degrees, so that might cross a house cusp if you're using a quadrant system. In either case, you want to look for a new unfolding of some story related to that house again now. Perhaps it's directly linked to that story from 8 years ago, or maybe this is a new chapter, but still along the same theme in some way, and a new chance to more consciously engage that story. So 8 years ago is 2012, like I said, and again, do you have important planets in Gemini, Sagittarius, Virgo, or Pisces? And if so, you might reflect on important events from that year because there's a link with that cycle and the current one. Now, not everything will repeat exactly. So if you're remembering something difficult, don't worry. Stating the obvious, you're hopefully older and wiser now. So if a challenging old storyline or dynamic does come back, it's likely that you have more resources now to be able to manage this possibly in a different way and have a different outcome. And looking forward, this cycle will also tie into the next time Venus retrogrades in Gemini, which will be in 2028. So Venus retrograde can be harnessed as a cycle of renewal, among other things. And anytime a planet goes retrograde, I think of it as a kind of reset. It's a time to take a step back in terms of what that planet represents, to go inside, to reflect, and to review. And if we allow that process to happen, when Venus moves direct again, we can experience something that feels like renewal or a fresh take on something, or maybe a more integrated approach to moving forward with Venus types of actions, intentions, or experiences. So people ask me, is Venus retrograde good or bad? I like what you were saying earlier, Vanessa. You can really use the cycle well, once Venus goes direct, you can really take things in a positive new direction.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm just really curious about the outer bounds. How does you start with that? I'm an avid listener on this one.
Yeah, definitely. So Venus is out of bounds and retrograde at the first part of this, at the first part of this cycle. So we've been in the Venus retrograde already for a little bit. And also we've had Venus out of bounds. Venus was out of bounds before the retrograde, and only for a couple more days now, but you can still reflect back on this, the last couple of weeks of May and the first couple of days of June and kind of apply what I'm about to share. But if you're new to astrology and you haven't heard this term, I just refer you to my Intro to Out of Bounds webinar on Astrology University, where I do explain a lot of the technical details, and I don't want to go into all that right now. And I also explain its meaning a bit more. But one of the things that I want to say about this month and this particular out of bounds cycle is that being retrograde and out of bounds at the same time is really unique. So it makes this Venus retrograde really unique. It's a Venus retrograde unlike most other retrogrades that you've seen, for sure. When we add Venus out of bounds to Venus retrograde, the simplest thing I might say is that whatever Venus is correlating with will be intensified and amplified. So again, it's one of the reasons why I say the first part of this particular cycle is so strong. Some out of bounds keywords in terms of meaning are extreme, above the bell curve, over the top, too much, outlier, unrestrained, unlimited, and excessive. And out of bounds, you know, technically the very, very short version, it just means that the planet's at its maximum declination, and it's simultaneously at a declination that's higher than the sun's upper limit. So it goes higher than the declination that the sun can go. So that's why we have keywords like over the top and extreme. And being at a high declination doesn't change Venus so much as it removes any constraints around Venus's expression, and it opens Venus up to a kind of freedom. And speaking of opening up, I'm not surprised that under Venus out of bounds, the pressure to open up the economy has been so great, and that a lot of economies did start to open up while Venus was out of bounds. Just an interesting correlation there.
Yeah, and the money aspect of Venus.
And the money aspect, and people talking about the economy and the damage to the economy and all of that. And also, you know, just tying in with Venus retrograde on that subject, this whole experience is helping some people think about what they really value economically and otherwise, and how they might, for people that we know stories of people who've lost their jobs and lost their work and are in really terrible circumstances. And some of them are lucky enough that they can use the cycle as a time for reinvention. While I know that others are just in total crisis, right? So we have to honor that as well. But at the same time, there is potential here for reinvention and a lot of creativity. And that's another thing that Venus Out of Bounds really correlates with. One of my favorite Venus Out of Bounds examples is Bjork. Now, Bjork has three out of bounds planets, and we know that her creativity is off the hook, but she's a really great example. You know, one technical piece I didn't say that I want to mention for our listeners is that the declination number that you're looking for to determine whether it's a planet is out of bounds isn't something you can see in the natal chart. You have to kind of geek out and look at some of the other tables of numbers that you can get in an astrology program or on astro.com. But what might fewer restrictions on a Venus experience look like? I mean, Venus doesn't correlate with the most rational behaviors in the first place.
Well, it's in Gemini, though. It's in a very rational sign.
Yeah, definitely. But we're talking about human relationships, which are a big part of Venus's domain, and they're famously complicated. And I think when you add in that mutability, you could definitely get into some relationship complications and maybe some complicated communications, we might say.
Yeah, maybe. Definitely a backtrack. I'm actually wondering about the money side, unbounded spending.
Sure. And especially last month when the Venus-Neptune aspect was stronger, for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, you can never really say what exactly is going to be the external trigger for these things to happen. But yeah, maybe, you know, there's going to be crazy spending. And I noticed like one of the people that have profited the most at this period is the owner of Amazon. You know, it's just all about shopping.
Yep.
And people have been spending like to extreme and unbounded in a way. And then of course, the government opening its coffers and spreading the money, which is, you know, in so many different countries. That's happened in our country as well, in Australia, and it's fairly unheard of.
Definitely.
It's interesting that it's piled up. It's a really interesting Venus retro cycle, this one.
Well, it really ties in with what I know about Venus being out of bounds, because when Venus is out of bounds, we might, and this is true of any out of bounds planet, we might have even less access to the parts of our nature that might act as a check and balance on Venus. Now, Venus being in Gemini has a bit of that, but being out of bounds is going to mean that maybe you're thinking about it. You think you're being objective and you're really not, or you're off down some rabbit hole. When Venus is out of bounds, we might not question our attractions, for instance, whether that's to people or to food or to those things that we're shopping for online. So it's pretty easy to just make what might later seem like poor judgment calls in those arenas.
And what about like in terms of relating, could it mean that people do actually reach out more? Like they're not bounded by what they think is or is not appropriate. They might be like, you know what, I'm just going to go for it.
Exactly.
And really jump over that next hurdle.
Totally. Yep. I think so, for sure. Yeah. So it's good, you know, it's good to have friends around who can kind of be checks and balances for you. But remember, we're all experiencing Venus out of bounds right now. There is a thing though, if you have an out of bounds planet in your natal chart, and then that planet is going out of bounds again, it's works very similarly to transits in that it can call up those issues for you. It can, if you've got a problem in that part of your life or your chart, it can exacerbate those problems. But it can also, a planet being out of bounds can open you up to new solutions as well. Yeah. There are definitely some wonderful gifts with Venus out of bounds, and most of those are visible as enhanced creativity or artistry. So if you're a naturally creative person, and as a side note, I believe we all are, we just don't always acknowledge it, this can be a really fruitful time. If you're an artist or a musician or a writer or a creative writer, make sure you carve out space. Well, now we're nearing the end of the cycle, but you want to carve out space for that creativity. And if you've had an impulse in the last couple of weeks, even though Venus is going back in bounds, you can use that time now to flesh out your ideas, explore it, and bring your ideas into form. Because you might come up with some really cool new projects. Go ahead.
That's how I'm thinking of it, because you said Bjork, and she's pretty unbounded with her creativity, and that seems like a real positive to me, as well as the reaching out to people that, you know, because everyone has had that distance, maybe it has taken a little bit more of an openness to get people to connect. And I've noticed in really new ways as well, we're all so much more comfortable because of this experience connecting digitally. Like we've all downloaded Zoom and it has opened that up, actually. And I wonder if that's that out of bounds thing that's really helped. I can feel that shift personally.
Right. Yeah, could be. Well, also, Mercury is out of bounds at the same time.
Yes.
It turns out. And Mercury is out of bounds from May 17th to June 10th. So we're in a time period where we have both. And then Mercury is going to be out of bounds until June 10th. It's a great time to think out of the box, come up with new solutions. We're seeing some examples in the collective where people are also saying some really off-kilter things and having some off-kilter ideas, and conspiracy theories are definitely in the news and coming into the mainstream. So it's a really interesting time. A lot more we can say about that, but I do want to just kind of focus on and highlight the creative potential. So
yeah, I think it's very interesting.
If you've had a problem, you've been kind of chewing on, Mercury out of bounds is a great time to try to kind of journal and think about, talk to people and come up with solutions. And on that note, it's worth saying that getting back to Venus, our Venus work isn't done alone. So thinking about Venus retrograde and this whole cycle, you need the interaction, the relating, and in Gemini, the conversation, both talking and listening, to engage with Venus right now. And in that process of exchange, you have the opportunity to get closer to yourself. And the closer you are to yourself, the more authentic, the more grounded, the more clear you are as you pursue your desires.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so the other thing we were going to talk about is the Neptune-Mars conjunction that's heating up. And kind of, I guess we could lead into that by just pointing to the murder of George Floyd earlier this week and the protests that have been unfolding in the United States and around that. And we're not going to talk about this in detail in terms of what that correlates with astrologically, because some of you might be wondering. I personally think it correlates pretty strongly with the Saturn-Uranus square, which although it's waning right now, it was very close to exact in March. It wasn't exact yet. It will be exact three times next year, but it got very close in March, close enough to be in orb, and was definitely noticeable. As you saw in the United States, at least, the main government fighting with the states fighting with the cities, you know, fighting with the counties, and all, you know, it's like in terms of a response to the pandemic. So there was a lot of fighting and disagreement about who actually was in control and who should be creating the rules and which rules were good or not, and all of that. And then a lot of people protesting against whatever rules for whatever reasons. And I think these protests are unfolding under that same energy. And one of the main reasons is because these cycles also relate historically to the abolitionist movement and the Civil War, which are directly tied into the race issues in the United States. Also, we're coming up to the U.S. Pluto return very soon, and Pluto moves very slowly. And because we're getting so close to the Pluto return, that means we're in the balsamic phase of its cycle. And during a balsamic phase, things really begin to break down and fall apart in preparation for a new beginning. And unfortunately, we can't kind of focus on what that new beginning is just yet, because Pluto always requires us to be all in and eyes wide open in whatever that breakdown is about. And we're in the middle of it right now in the United States. And doesn't take astrology to see that the phrase that came to mind is the shit is going to get a little bit thicker before we're able to get out of it.
I would agree. And the Chiron coming in, it's already squared this American sun, you know, from the American natal chart, the Sibley chart. And, you know, that's a crisis of identity coming back up.
Right. Yeah. And do you have anything else you can say about that Chiron square? I know you love talking about Chiron. And
I find it fascinating with the American chart. I can see that, the Uranus Saturn square, I can see that Pluto coming back in for that return trip home because of the, you know, it's the situation now is exploding like a volcano. It's volcanic. Everything that's been repressed is coming out. So it's all Pluto imagery as well. And we're not going to go so much into that today, but I'll go into the Chiron. I also think it's interesting that Chiron in the fourth house is natally square the American sun. as well. So it's back in that orb and coming for a return. So I just think it's that there is like this basis of pain and wounding that needs to be healed. There's that identity crisis, but it also, you know, the gift of that is if that was a person, you'd say this person's identity is very wounded and they're very sensitive about that identity. And any strike, a perceived strike to it is met with no way, like if sun is in Cancer, so defensiveness, the hard shell comes up. And but on the flip side, it's like really understanding vulnerable people and becoming that shamanic healer. You know, the sensitivity and the caring of the Cancer can really take everyone in and be the family once you get out of defensive mode and become you know, the big mother.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a nice image to hold in mind during times like these. And then getting back to the Mars Neptune, I think that I think about this event with George Floyd and his murder by the police. Obviously, this isn't the first time that's happened in America, and it ties into a much, much older story that's been going on for a long time. And we can see that whenever Saturn and Uranus come together, that story tends to flare back up again, but especially bringing in Pluto as well, the Saturn-Pluto conjunction from January, and then also the Pluto return in the US chart turns up the volume on Pluto quite a bit in that story as well. So we have some intense shadow material to still work through in the United States. The story isn't over. It's not going to be wrapped up easily. You know, Pluto stories aren't things that you can just fix with a weekend workshop. <You know? laughs> It takes a little bit more. Actually, facing your shadow is not an easy journey.
And in this case, it's a collective.
It's a collective shadow, isn't it? Yep.
It's big. It's everywhere, and everyone's in the thick of it. And every individual has a component of that, so you can address what that is for you, your component of it. Yep. And if more people do that, that's how that shadow can work out. But yeah, otherwise, it's on the main stage, isn't it? It's just this huge explosion.
And that's such a great point, Vanessa, because our individual actions are important. And in times like these, where it can feel so overwhelming, you're like, well, I can't do anything about that big movement of whatever it is. You can still take individual action. And I think if we just even dial it back, our focus back to this month and this month ahead that we're looking at, or these next 3 weeks, the Mars Neptune aspect that's heating up right now as we speak, I think they're within 8 degrees now, and they're just, you know, moving closer and closer to a conjunction. Mm-hmm. It describes a kind of energy that we can tap into right now to respond in a specific way right now. And Mars calls us to take action, right? Neptune, not so much. Well, I feel like it calls us to experience, right? Neptune calls us to step into experience, but Neptune doesn't always want us to, like, you can't do something with Neptune. I mean, there are things you can do to get into the experience, but it's not like the doing planet, like Mars, where Mars is asking us to take a stand, to do something, to stop something.
Mars is in Pisces.
But it's in Pisces. Yeah. And that's such a great point. So it's like, it's not the most forward, you know, clear, forward moving Mars, or easy to understand even in yourself. So I think Mars in Pisces is asking us, what cause moves you right now, among other things. It's asking us to tap into our inspiration, but also with Neptune and coming up to Neptune, our spirituality, and to have whatever actions we take be really grounded in perhaps compassion, understanding for others, understanding of others' pain. Right, Neptune in Pisces with Mars in Pisces there might make us aware of other people's pain and suffering, and taking action to, Mars can protect and defend, and taking action to protect and defend those that you perceive as needing help.
Yeah. Well, I would say I'm calling this one Yin Factor 5000, because it's like Pisces is so yin, then the Neptune's in there as well. We've got some squares from these two to the sun and to the Gemini planets.
Right.
With the full moon, that Mars is going to be conjunct Neptune, and in a T-square, it's going to be the point of the T-square. So that's what I was drilling down into for this month.
Right.
And I think it's like acting. Well, the key that I boil down to actually is, how can we act? What is like the best way or the thing. It's, to me, it's like that union and oneness of Mars in Pisces and then the Neptune dialing the oneness up. So what does that look like? To me, that looks like solidarity is the word I came to.
Oh, I love it.
Solidarity, yeah. You know, that oneness, really break out of polarity, action, Mars,
right?
Selflessly.
Yeah. Or action on behalf of the collective, even.
Yeah, from a place of compassion, from empathy, from, because you can feel like it's sensitive action as well, like you're aware of your actions. And it's, you know, Tony and I, we were talking about this when we're planning the forecast. And I think that the thing with Mars we see in a patriarchal society is like everything yang is the way, but half of everything is yin. So Mars in a yin sign, what is the best way to use it? It has its value that is equal. It's just a different way. And you were talking to me about someone's quote with hammering and now with the fish. Can you go into that? It was great. And then.
It's something that Rick Levine says, and I'm not sure if he coined the phrase or the idea, but that having Mars in Pisces is like trying to hammer a nail with a fish.
And then you had an addition to that, like, don't hammer a nail right now.
Right. Like maybe it's not about hammering the nail, right? Like,
yeah.
Maybe the fish in your hand is appropriate, but the nail's not.
So it's about doing things in a yin and a different way. And it's just as valuable and valid. So you work with what you have and you don't judge the way, whether it's yang or yin. So when Mars then goes into Aries, get the hammer out and hit that nail. But right now,
right,
it's the yin way. So it is very magical, Mars. You know,
it is. It is.
Next to Neptune in sign. Magical. You know, it's like there's no boundaries. There is no limit. People could probably step out of their comfort zones or what they'd normally do, again, goes with those unbounded planets, and really reach out and do something of service.
Yeah. And we have to acknowledge the shadow here too. And stepping out of those boundaries could mean that you go into sketchy territory. So I say that do your best to have your actions come from a spiritual place, whatever that means for you. So connecting to your own higher power, connecting to your own sense of connection with the divine.
Nonviolent
action.
Yeah, I think of Gandhi, like he got that going and look what he did with that. You know, that would be he had Mars in a water sign as well. I checked because I thought, I wonder where his Mars is. Is it a water sign? Although that was Scorpio. I think of The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. There's a whole book. Dan Millman, I think, wrote that.
Yep.
Peaceful Warrior. Compassionate action, acts of kindness. You were saying, Tony, it's like nonlinear time.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, the action isn't necessarily forward. It might be, you know, if we're thinking about yin and yang, where does that action come from? What does a yin-driven action look like? Maybe it's not straightforward, but maybe it's still driven from your place of inspiration. I was thinking of Mars and Pisces as expressing through interpretive dance.
And whale noises.
And whale, yes, definitely. We were also talking about this fun idea of that spoon anecdote from The Matrix. Right?
Yes.
Where Aries, Mars and Aries might, you know, the idea is, if you, I'm sure you've seen The Matrix, where, you know, you're trying to bend the spoon with your mind in The Matrix. But, you know, Mars and Aries is just going to try to bend the spoon with their hands, right? And what's the quote from The Matrix, Vanessa?
So the quote is, I'll say that Mars and Aries probably can bend the spoon with their, right, their hands.
Yes.
But we can't use the energy like that right now. So do not bend the spoon. That's impossible. Instead, only try to realize the truth. There is no spoon. Then you'll see it's not the spoon that bends. It's only yourself. And I've put this little thing on Googling about that. Of if you don't see a wall in your mind, you can walk through it. So many limitations are self-imposed, and there are so many other options and playbook scenarios. When everyone is complicit, nothing changes. When we realize we don't have to play by the rules of a system, we send out different signals and change our reality from within by But it's by bending ourselves out of the expected game pattern. And we realize we see what we expect to. So change inner perception and expectation of both yourself and the external world.
Amazing. Yeah. And
saw it as a game, but
right.
You know, the correlation is so obvious with reality and our perception of things. I thought it was just so clever.
So clever. Yeah. And also just, I mean, we could have just focused on that for this whole podcast. That, I mean, we're going to talk about key takeaways from this episode. And to me, that's the key takeaway. That Matrix quote alone, if you just reflect on that and what it means, I think that really speaks to Mars and Pisces so well.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you get into Pisces or aspects with Neptune, you really need to describe things with poetry or with prose, because all this objective stuff that we've been talking about with Gemini, you can't just sum it up in a bumper sticker phrase, right? That's not going to really get at Neptune.
These are square, that sun and moon.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's square. So it's not an easy blend, is it? It's
like there's a tension.
There's tension, and you've got to integrate somehow. With the peak of the T-square, though, so right. You have to take that, you know, that's the challenge, is this compassion and this yin way of knowing as well, even though you can't prove it.
Exactly, yeah. So trusting your intuition might be a thing right now.
Acting on your intuition.
Exactly. Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. Acting. Definitely. Did we talk about the shadow? Because you do always have to look at both sides, don't we?
We did a little bit. I was just saying that, you know, you were talking about that lack of boundary, and I was saying that can kind of lead us into sketchy territory. And the way I try to work against that myself, or balance that out myself, is to try to stay connected to source for what that means for me. And I have a regular meditation practice, and I feel like I can actually get into those deeper states where I can really connect to source, especially when I'm getting ungrounded, like has been so easy to do in these last few months for me personally.
Well, the meditation would definitely be a big one for that Mars. Like, even what do I do? Look for the answer, like let it come to you.
Oh, well, I just think about Tina Turner's chart, and how in the film biopic that was made many years ago about her, I think it was probably called What's Love Got to Do with It, where they just showed how in the midst of her, the peak of her abuse that she was experiencing from Ike Turner, how she discovered Buddhism and meditation, and she has Mars in Pisces. And it was that the mantra, the repeating the mantra kind of meditation that she was doing that helped her tap into that state where she could actually, through that process and through that connection to, I guess, a deeper spiritual focus and intention for her life, she was then able to take action to defend herself and protect herself and shore up her own boundaries.
Yeah, the compassionate action. Mm-hmm. I will say also just to be aware of the victim feeling helpless, a lack of clarity, the illusion, delusion, and addictive behavior as escapism.
Gosh, Tina Turner's a great example there too, because when you're in that cycle of abuse, it's pretty easy to fall into that victim mentality. And I'm not saying that with any blame at all. Like I would, you know, I fully would understand it makes total sense why you would go there. Right. But Tina Turner's an example of somebody who actually took that next step and
thrived. And, like she just went supernova. It's a great story to see, like when you get that Mars in Pisces in action, and anything's possible.
Definitely. Definitely. So, you know, another thing is something I said in a Facebook post today or yesterday, which is don't just wish for somebody else to address the problem. If there's a problem right now, you're the one that we're waiting for.
Yes.
You know,
what can you do? That's actually what I ask myself when I am getting annoyed at something. I think, hang on a minute, because I do have Mars in Pisces. You know, you don't naturally think of what you could do and take action. So knowing that, I think, hang on, how can I contribute in a positive way to this? Like, what can I create? Which is, you know, you've said the create word as well. And what can I create and make a new vision of something if I don't like that? How can I open it up and offer it up? Here you go. And that has just turned my world around.
Right.
Because I'll sit there like the fish, like experiencing it and getting annoyed. I'm like, hang on, I'm getting annoyed. Right. What is it that's annoying me? How can I change it? Like just make a new reality and offer it up to people. Like that's the leadership of the Mars as well.
Mm.
but in a really, creative Piscean way.
Yeah,
and that was my other question that this whole thing made me think of, like, if you don't know what to do, like in lots of situations, I'll think, what will such and such do? Like, what would a Virgo do right now or a Capricorn? And I get different ideas than I would normally think of. And I think of specific people. So in this case, that Mars conjunct Neptune in Pisces, what an archetype of like a spiritual leader. What would a spiritual leader do right now?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's a great question to just ruminate on right now. If you're about to take action, you know, pick any spiritual leader that resonates with you, whether it's Martin Luther King or Malcolm X or Dalai Lama. I mean, whoever it is, you know, thinking about what they might do is going to automatically tap you into a higher way of thinking about it.
Absolutely. And it opens up all those other options straight away and you open to receive them. And I think that's making the most of that Pisces and Neptune Mars at the moment.
Definitely.
Tune into a higher power.
Well, we definitely hit the highlights really well. I think we're down to the last couple of quick segments that we have for the show.
What's on your coffee table, Tony?
Yes.
What are you reading?
This segment is about what we're reading. And I am reading a super nerd book right now called The Elements of House Division by a fellow named Ralph William Holden. And this was a book that's put out by the Faculty of Astrological Studies in the 70s. And I was just teaching a course on the houses. And this book has to do with how the houses are calculated and kind of nerding out on some of the calculations for the different house systems and some of the conundrums that astrologers have with using houses. And you know that that's a big can of worms. So if you want to geek out on that one, I don't think the book is in print anymore. And because I've mentioned it already previously to my students, I think the price has gone up. But what I've been told is that you can find it on some used bookstore sites. So maybe don't start with Amazon. Start with your favorite used bookstore websites and see if you can track down that way. How about you, Vanessa?
Well, like you, I've got a lot of books open and started. Mostly I've been reading for projects I'm doing, but I keep going back to Cosmos and Psyche. You know,
it's my favorite.
Richard Tarnas. My favorite bit is about Moby Dick, how nature stands up for itself at these times.
Oh my gosh, have I told you that's my favorite part?
No.
Too?
Oh my gosh. That was fascinating. I loved it.
Me too. Yeah, I love that section.
I can only read a bit at a time because a lot of it is so heavy and I can really feel the heaviness of the times. It does discuss a lot about what's happening. I love the cultural context and the history that he's put in there. So much research, it's so well written. And Tony, I think, have you finished now? I know you were doing something where you're guiding people through weekly through that particular section of the book.
Yeah, we did it. No, we're done. We did a whole course on Cosmos and Psyche, a 4-week course where I helped people because it's a hard book to crack. And I was trying to make the book more accessible to people. We had a lot of people take the course who had the book for 10 years and just the size of it. It's like anytime they picked up a new book to read, they're like, I think I'll pick up this book because it's a little bit shorter. And then they never got around to Cosmos and Psyche. So they used the opportunity to read the book and it was really great. And students really said it really did help them. It really did help make the book more accessible. And I co-taught that course with Saffron Rossi and she's amazing.
She's just beautiful. Yes. And
professor
also,
from Pacifica College. Yes. Yeah, definitely. And we also read the Saturn-Pluto chapter while Saturn and Pluto were conjunct.
Oh,
so that was pretty amazing. It was intense and dramatic and powerful for sure. Yeah. And okay, so we were going to do a key takeaway section as well.
Key takeaway and monthly mantra.
Yeah. So for me, the key takeaway is that quote from The Matrix, and then reassessing your values under Venus retrograde.
Yes. Yeah.
How about for you, Vanessa?
The words and the language. I think the words and the language and for me, the relationships with people and relating to people and how important it is to listen to what language that the other person needs to hear too. It's just essential. So that listening aspect.
Definitely.
You know, and it's so reciprocal and two way, and you might think whatever, but it's something important to the other person. And that's essential. So that's what's really come up for me. And then, of course, that Mars, what would a spiritual leader do? Mm-hmm. And the creativity of everything, closing the gap,
definitely,
closing the divide between people, absolutely making that oneness connection.
I love it.
And we had mantras.
Yes, monthly mantras. So you say mantra, I say mantra. Love it. So what are our mantras this month?
The mantra is for Gemini. We have, I listen with curiosity and speak my truth with clarity.
Oh, that's a good one. I mean, I know we just came up with it, but I think it's a great one.
Great. So I listen with curiosity and speak my truth with clarity. And when you do these things over and over, I think they really come round. And I write things that are exactly like that for my new moon intentions. And then when the full moon comes up, I look for expressions of that. So I kind of redo things as well. And then I look for evidence because it should be blossoming at that time. So key in your RAS and you'll see the thing that you need to find. Like I just think full moon light, illuminate the thing so that I actually notice it consciously.
Right.
So then we had one for the Neptune Mars Piscesness, which is, I use my energy for the liberation and end to suffering of all sentient beings. I was thinking of the Dalai Lama there.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
A spiritual leader. What would a spiritual leader do?
Yes.
He would use his energy. He does use his energy for the liberation and end to all suffering for all sentient beings. So, because I think of the animals as well.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah. And such a great person to call on for inspiration right now during this time.
Yeah, just people, and especially like him, that are just giving their whole life to the service of humanity with compassion. He's a Cancer.
Right. Definitely a high expression of Cancer, like you were describing
very
earlier.
High, mm-hmm. Very high, very high. So I think it'll be really interesting to talk about that next month when we do get into Cancer season.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Awesome. Especially for America with that Sun in Cancer chart.
Definitely. Oh, that's going to be a good one. Well, thanks for joining me today, Vanessa. It's been awesome.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed this too. I can't think of better company.
Yeah, me too. And I hope that you listeners have really enjoyed this session, and we'll be doing this monthly, and we'll mm-hmm. join you next month for Cancer season. So until then, take really good care of yourself out there, everyone.
And stay cosmic.
Stay cosmic, yes. And spread love when you can.
Close the gap.
Love it. Okay, bye for now.
Bye for now.
Thanks for tuning in to the Astrology University podcast. Study astrology online with some of the great astrologers of our time at www.astrologyuniversity.com, where we offer webinars, online classes, and virtual summits to bring you inspiration, connection, and insight through the study of astrology. Take good care, and we'll see you next time.